Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Hope you're having a good day today. Coming up, we'll hear an interview with one of Florida's most beloved authors, Carl Hiaasen, who's both a newspaper columnist and a novelist. He really cares deeply about Florida, and we're going to hear an interview with him in just a moment. But first, two listener comments about last Friday's program, or the last Thursday's program, rather, the last time we were on the air together. One of the listener's comments is a general comment, and the other is about Vice President Mike Pence, when he was in Florida last week, was critical of Democrats because he said that they wanted to make the poor more comfortable. Well, after that program and playing Pence's soundbite, this is what two listeners had to say.
Alpi Kroll in Dover. I just wanted to mention this book by Jim Sciutto. It's called The Shadow War. He wrote it last year. I'm reading it again now. It refers to the Russian hacking that went on earlier this month. It's kind of been shuffled to the back of the news cycle, I guess, whatever, but it's extremely important. I think, you know, everybody needs to be aware of this book. He was way out front on the information. Anyway, have a good holiday. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Rob, this is Dennis Plews down in Sarasota, Florida. Concerning the Michael Pence statements you broadcast on your show today, Christmas Eve, what it sounded like to me was that he was accusing Democrats of being true Christians. I find that a little strange, as he claims to be one. Thanks.
Those listener comments came in after last Thursday's program. This is WMNF in Tampa. Well, Carl Hiaasen is a veteran newspaper writer and reporter and columnist, and he's also a novelist. He grew up here in Florida. He's a native of Florida, and he's seen the changes since his birth in the 1950s. He's seen a lot of changes here that he doesn't like to Florida's beautiful environment. He frequently, in his novels, skewers the powerful and the smug and the ultra-rich. And so we're going to hear an interview with Carl Hiaasen next here on 88.5 FM. If you want to comment during the program, you're welcome to send an email to the studio. The address is dj@wmnf.org. This comes to us from the program Florida This Week, which airs on the local PBS station WEDU-TV. Coming up next, Carl Hiaasen is a best-selling author, a columnist for the Miami Herald, and a Florida native. He's written books for both adults and for younger readers, often poking fun at the strange things that go on here. With books published in 34 languages, he's been fearless in skewering the interests that are doing harm to this beautiful state. I'll talk with one of Florida's favorite writers, Carl Hiaasen, next on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome back. Carl Hiaasen graduated from the University of Florida and went to work as a general assignment reporter for the Miami Herald. His work on the paper's weekly magazine and prize-winning investigations eventually led him to write a regular column. He's used those Florida experiences to inspire a number of his fiction and nonfiction books. His journalism has also received numerous awards, including a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Society of Newspaper Columnists. His latest novel, Squeeze Me, has among its characters a crude-spoken commander-in-chief, a Palm Beach posse of loyal, financially enhanced women, and a giant python. And Carl Hiaasen, it's an honor to have you here on Florida This Week. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Where do you get these ideas from?
Gosh, I don't know. Just pick up the newspaper any single day, and there's too much to choose from in Florida. That's why we have so many writers down here. It's just the material is pretty rich. The hard part is staying ahead of it. I mean, if you're writing satire, how do you improve on the you know, just the everyday flow of news in Florida, which is pretty extraordinary.
Your latest target in Squeeze Me are the denizens of Palm Beach. So for folks who haven't been to Palm Beach and don't know what it's like, how would you describe it to an outsider?
Well, it's a beautiful island. It's a very exclusive place, obviously. And, you know, it was most famous when, as I was growing up, because the Kennedy family had a compound there. It's most famous now because our current and presumably outgoing commander-in-chief has a club and a residence there. But it's obviously the most expensive real estate in Florida, probably. And there's a lot of old money there, and they do a lot of great charity work. They insist on having these extravagant balls, especially during the winter season before the pandemic happened. You know, every night would be something, a new mansion, a new cause, a new disorder or disease that they're raising money for, which is all good stuff. But, and I have friends who live there who are not part of that world, because it is still a lot of old money. And you know, the demographics skew, you know, a little older.
A lot older and a lot richer than the rest of us. I like how in your book, you always, when you talk about the person in Palm Beach, you always talk about the source of their fortunes. And sometimes they have two disparate sources.
Well, if they've got money and they marry into money, you know, like one family might made all their money in bauxite and the other one might have made it in hand sanitizers. But you always have to refer to both fortunes when you refer to them, because you don't want them to think that, you know, it broadens their base. but when you write satire, you obviously are looking for some fertile territory, and there's plenty of it in Florida, and it's probably why all the novels have been set here. I mean, there's almost no place you can go and not get a backdrop for a story like that, or, you know, just there's just so much. I'll use the word colorful material to choose from.
The president, the outgoing president's involved in a controversy in Palm Beach because several of his soon-to-be neighbors say they don't want him to come down there. Talk about that for a moment.
That's a shocker. Oh, that's a shocker. he inspired the same sort of reaction in Manhattan when he was living there. There were people who cheered when he moved to Washington because they could finally, you know, he just has that kind of warm, winning personality that, these are some individuals that live near Lago, Mar-a-Lago, and they, because it is technically a private club, and that's how he acquired it with all the tax structure for private club. It's not supposed to be anybody's residence, legal residence. It's supposed to be a commercial enterprise, basically. And so they're going in on this, saying, look, you can't move back here because you can't live here permanently because it's a club and it's not zoned to be residential. And so they're attempting to disrupt his post-presidential plans, and we'll see how that shakes out. But it's not surprising. If it's a small island, and if you live there, even whenever he comes to visit, or even when the First Lady is there, the traffic is already bad. It becomes nightmarish when they're around. The security and just everything gets blocked off. So the people that live there really, they have no burning desire to see him down there all the time.
It's funny you say that, because I was looking at the voter registration numbers, and I was looking at some of the 2016 voting numbers, and that little strip out there in Palm Beach votes Republican, or tends to vote more Republican than Democrat, but they don't want a Republican president living amongst them.
I think it's a traffic issue more than anything. I just think, you know, they want to be able to take their golf carts out and not have to dodge motorcades with armed Secret Service in them. But, you know, it's congestion. It's like, yeah, that little strip and right there, of course. Is very conservative, but that doesn't mean, you know, again, it's my own backyard. That's the syndrome which all Floridians are familiar with. Everything's great in theory until it happens in your backyard, and now you're going to have him. And, you know, who knows? He's going to, you know, probably start his own radio network or a television or cable network. And if he bases it there, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be chaotic if you live down there. I mean, he's got to make a lot of money. He's up to his, you know, ass in debt right now. So he's got to get cash flow going. So it'll be a lot of activity down there.
So Python plays a big role in in your latest book. Do you think we've got that Python problem licked, or you think they're going to take over Miami and Palm Beach eventually?
No, we don't have it licked. Growing up, when I was a kid, you know, growing up down around the Everglades, you didn't see these are invasive. It's an invasive species. I used to catch a lot of snakes. I still do once in a while catch a snake around here if I see one. But this was these are gigantic animals. They've eaten their way through the Everglades. And the premise of the novel was, as people in Palm Beach County, I mean, the snakes have migrated north as the climate's gotten warmer. And I just thought it was only a matter of time. And they get 18 feet long. They eat full-grown white-tailed deer, and I thought it's only a matter of time before they swim over to Palm Beach. They're great swimmers. There's thousands and thousands of them out there. And I thought it's only a matter of time they show up. You know, how can you beat this as an idea for a novel? Pythons, Mar-a-Lago. I mean, you just take it and run with it.
So Florida already has a weird reputation. Your books have been translated into 34 languages. I mean, people around the world love your writing, but do you feel like you're partly responsible for making Florida seem like a really weird, unusual place that you wouldn't want to visit?
Well, Rob, I spent my whole career trying to make it appear to be a place that you wouldn't want to be. I would love to see this population go back to something like it was a generation ago. We have 22 million people in this state now. It's become an urbanized place in a very, very short period of time, and we still have over 1,000 people a day net moving here, which is almost no country has that kind of outside immigration going on. So everything I've written, not just the newspaper work as well as the novels, you would think that I would have scared somebody away. But every time I'm sitting in I-95, all I can do is look around and see how badly I failed to put a dent in any of this.
So how do you I mean, if you're not scaring people away, you grew up here. And you're one of the few people, I think, are still around who's a native Floridian. Maybe there's a few left. But what's the worst thing that you've seen over the years? And what's the biggest, what makes it? So, you know, you talk about the traffic there on I-95. We've got terrible traffic over here in the Tampa Bay area. What's the worst thing that's happened to you, you know, the worst change that you've seen?
Well, it's been just out of control, overdevelopment. Too many people crammed into too many places, and the cause of it is real simple. It's just plain old, good old-fashioned corruption. I mean, Florida's been an epicenter for the engine of greed that works in Tallahassee, you know, and works in a lot of state capitals where money talks. And as a result, things happen to communities that aren't the best things for the communities, but it's good for certain people in the communities who have power and they have the right lobbyists. And again, you can see it again. I mean, I live in Indian River County, and you can drive down A1A, and there's a very strict height restriction in the Vero Beach area, for example. You can't you can't build high rises on the ocean or anywhere on the barrier island. But as soon as you hit St. Lucie County, which is just about 8 miles south, there's stacked on both sides, right up against the ocean. I mean, and you can see, well, they got their money's worth, whoever had those lobbyists, and they haven't been able to crack where I live yet. But that's the difference, and it's about quality of life. Where do you want to live? Where do you want your kids to grow up? And if you want to live and I used to say that when I was, you know, working in Miami, I still write for the Herald, but when I was literally, you know, working at the newsroom every day, I used to drive in. And the trial, you see, this is just, it's just like Newark with palm trees. There's no bloody difference. It's just, all that's difference is the climate. It's just a big, tough city. And if you want more and more big, tough cities, then Tallahassee is happy to make that happen.
You know, I've often wondered what people in South Florida think of Tallahassee, because for us here in the Tampa Bay area, it takes us 4.5 hours to get there to Tallahassee. The plane service is terrible between here and there. What do people in South Florida think about, you know, these politicians in Tallahassee who are okaying a lot of this development?
Well, this has been going on for years. It's no accident that the Capitol is up in Tallahassee, and it's no accident that it's so far removed from the population centers. Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Miami, Palm Beach, Broward, all of, they don't want to make it easy for the public to show up while the public's business is being done. The plane connections suck. No matter where you are in Florida trying to get into Tallahassee, the plane connections suck. And that's not an accident. And if you're in South Florida and you want to go up and there's a bill being debated and you want to be in the Capitol and be there and having those discussions, you have to commit 8 hours in a car, whatever it is, and then hotel rooms. They make it as difficult as possible for the voting public to be involved in this. Lobbyists and everyone else can fly in and out. I mean, they're probably flying private or they live there. And it just that's how it's always worked. And people have talked about moving its more centralized state capital so that actual human beings can show up. And it's not gone anywhere. And it's just one of those things that's worked out conveniently for the people who hold power.
The developers like it that way, and the people that are Everybody. Making a lot of money off this. Yeah. So I want to bring up something serious, and that is your brother Rob was shot to death, victim of a mass shooting at a newspaper in Annapolis a few years ago.
Yeah.
And in part because the shooter apparently was angry at something the newspaper had carried years before.
Years before, yeah.
You've emerged from that incident writing a very funny novel, Squeeze Me. How hard was it to be funny after the death of your own brother?
It was probably the hardest thing I ever did, Rob. There were a couple months after Rob was shot, and four others died in that newsroom, too. It was, and Rob would want me to be sure to mention that. But for the couple months, I couldn't write anything. I didn't write the column. You know, it was, the first time in my whole career as a journalist or as a novelist, I just couldn't put anything down on paper, and I just had to deal with it. And then when I finally started up again, the first thing I wrote was a column about Rob for the newspaper, about the whole issue of the press being an enemy. And this is not just in the Trump administration. There hasn't been a single administration that liked the media, going back to the days when they were printing them. And obviously the gun issue. And then after that column, I was able to start recalibrating and working on the book. And also Rob, I have to say, was the funniest one in the family. And he was a terrific writer himself. He was a columnist, and he'd written books. He would have been furious with me if I would have just shut it down at that point and not written anymore or not tackled another novel. I think he would have been in my ear the whole time saying, get up off your ass and start writing again. So I dedicated Squeeze Me to him, because in a strange way, I probably wouldn't have been able to finish that book and make it funny without my good memories of him, and also how devoted he was to the craft of writing, and that I couldn't just quit because I had a rough spirit. But tragedies happen to all families, you know. And if I was working on the assembly line in Boeing, I couldn't just disappear for a year if it happened to me there. I have to go back to put together airplanes again. So, I mean, you know, and that was his view of it, too. So that's how I did it. I'm not lying. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done.
It's really a testament to your inner strength to emerge from this with this laugh out loud, funny book, Squeeze Me. We've had tragedies. You've been through this tragedy personally, gun violence.
Yeah.
We've had the Pulse nightclub shooting. We've had the Parkland massacre here. If those incidents had taken place in Tallahassee, do you think that the legislators would be that indifferent? Because really, what's happened to change the gun situation in Florida since all this gun violence occurred?
Very, very, very little. And I think that's a good point. Rob was killed up in Annapolis, but it was just a couple months after the Parkland massacre. And I, ironically, you know, we've both gone to Plantation High School, which is very, very close to the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. It wasn't there when we were kids, but we went there. So that was our backyard, you know. And so when it happened, and we both had kids, and we both, I mean, we talked just like we did after, you know, Sandy Hook. So we had talked about it, but I agree with you completely. And I think this is also very true with the Pulse nightclub shooting. I can't imagine that was horrific for the numbers and how long it went on, and just the carnage in a very small space. It was unthinkable if that had happened in Tallahassee. It's hard for me to believe somebody wouldn't have grown a pair of balls and taken some political, courageous political steps on that.
Well, I know you love everything about Florida. I know you love the land, and I know you love the people. You know, a few years ago, Florida voters passed this amendment that would conceivably steer hundreds of billions of dollars to land conservation. Yep. I don't know if you've got this problem on the East Coast, but over here, it's hard for local communities to come up with enough money to buy land that's endangered and needs preservation. The legislature apparently has ignored the will of the voters. Very little of that money is coming in. What do you think about that? I mean, you've got an overwhelming vote for land conservation, and the legislature stands in the way.
Oh, well, this is not the first time it's happened. They just completely ignored the will of the people. They took some of the money, and it comes from the dock stamps that are on real estate purchases. It was no new revenue. It was a portion of revenue that was already in and is generated and churns every day with every real estate deal in this state. And instead, they started paying salaries. They started paying bureaucratic expenses. They wanted to spend it on anything except the actual purchase of land, to take actual land, wetlands, estuarial lands, parks, all kinds of things that could have been, you put parcels together, habitat parcels, and you to enrich your communities by doing that. They have subverted that amendment, and it would pass by a landslide, as you said. The will of the public is very much for this idea of conserving what's left of Florida and managing it wisely. But they just basically flipped off the public. And it's the same thing that happened this last time with the voting rights for felons who had served their term and were out. There was nothing in that amendment about making them pay every single court fee that had popped up during their trial and incarceration. Not a word. But they got it to the right conservative panel of judges, and they completely disenfranchised lots of people. And that was the mission. They didn't want more voters. This particular legislature, this particular governor, the Republicans have never been really high about voter turnout. They like to suppress turnout. They like their people to show up. They get real nervous when they see a lot of Black and Hispanic voters standing in line. And that's been the way it is. It's throughout the South, actually.
I do think that, you know, a few years ago, there was a major change, though. Jeb Bush, who I don't think had ever been in a canoe or a kayak, they put him in a canoe in one of Florida's beautiful rivers, and he suddenly decided, oh, this is worth saving. This is, I wonder how often these legislators get out to some of the beautiful parks and springs that we have.
I think they're probably out there more than you know, but they just don't have the guts to stand up. In Jeb's case, I don't know that he ever did or loved the Everglades in a way that a native or somebody who's out there all the time, but he was smart. He is a smart dude. And what he figured out was this is now an apple pie issue in Florida. The Everglades, the outdoors, conservation. He figured out pretty quickly it's on the front burner all of a sudden. And if you're going to get elected, and Ron DeSantis does the same thing, water quality issues are huge. The Everglades becomes huge. It is really like a mom and apple pie. And whether anybody who says that is sincere, Democrat or Republican, you don't know. But as long as they're saying it's better than when I was growing up, when they never even talked to the Everglades, they were still talking about trying to drain it. That isn't happening. That's not to say they're still not picking at the edges and destroying important parts of it. But if you're a politician in Florida, you're not winning statewide office if you get up and say, screw the Everglades, who cares? You're not getting elected. And Jeb figured that out pretty quickly.
Carl, let me ask you something personal. In the latest book, strippers appear. And you have a famous book, Striptease, that was made into a movie a few years ago starring Demi Moore. Do you have, can I ask you about strippers, and do you have a thing for strippers or?
No, I mean, I they make good characters in books, but I have no personal interest whatsoever in strippers. In fact, Striptease, that lead character, Erin, was a very reluctant participant in that business. And she had an ex-husband and who had taken her child, and she needed money to hire a lawyer. And in the novel, she didn't want to be working at that club. And it was but I did, in the course of my research, and I'll use that word, it was research. I'll use it to this day. This is going back a lot of years. But I did interview a lot of them, and some of them were just funny as hell and smart, and they had the best take on my gender, males, that I've ever seen. It wasn't a particularly rosy one, but they knew men, and I was able to work a lot of that into the novel, some of their own observations about it. But I don't have anything about. I mean, you know, in Squeeze Me, what happens is there's a dancer who appears who has a relationship with the president, the character of the president, who we only know in the novel is Mastodon. That's his secret service name, Mastodon. He bears some physical resemblance, I'm told, to the current president. But that was, for me, a take on the Stormy Daniels. I mean, in Trump's case, and I always love it when they say porn star. Everybody who's in pornography is a star, apparently. She's an actress in adult films. And then the one, you know, the famous $130,000 payoff that Michael Cohen funneled to her, the hush money. So this was just an offshoot. Rather than copy it and make it another porn actress, I just made this a dancer at a club. And Palm Beach County, I will say, has a fair number of those clubs, more than most counties do. And they also have those great strip mall massage parlors maybe Bob Kraft can talk about
Robert
that.
Robert Kraft, yeah. Hey, I got to ask you, one of the greatest names in literature, I think, is in Striptease, Urbana Sprawl. It was, that was the name of one of the strippers.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have to have a stage name, and it's better than like Brandy or Bambi. I mean, Urbana Sprawl, if you're a stripper in Florida, that I think that'd be a good name. I'll even give that one away. I don't have that trademarked or anything for future dancers.
Carl, let me ask you one more question. In addition to writing books and all that, you've written songs of the late Warren Zevon. We have about a minute and a half, but tell us about Warren Zevon. How did you guys work together?
I've been a fan of his music back to Lawyers, Guns, and Money and Excitable Boy, all those songs. And I had mentioned his music in one or two of my novels. And he is a voracious reader. And one day I was doing a book signing in L.A. and he showed up. And, you know, he had quite the reputation. He was kind of wild. He had been at one point a pretty wild dude. And I thought, God, I don't know whether he's here to punch me or tell me he likes the books. He waits in line, comes up and says, you know, I just want to thank you for mentioning my music and your books. And we went out afterwards and had coffee. Warren at that point wasn't drinking or doing any dope. And what we talked about, what we became friends, the reason it became, it was writing. All the craft of writing, in his case, writing a lyric, writing a line. In my case, doing the books and the journalism. But he spent so much time agonizing over his music, the lyrics of the music, which he was famously clever for. I mean, Springsteen, Dylan, so he's got so many people that have covered his songs. Because he was just a great writer, and that's where we bonded and became friends. And then so he ended up doing a couple songs together. I mean,
we're going to go out with one of those songs. Carl Hyacinth, thank you for coming on Florida This Week.
It's great seeing you, man.
Great
thanks
to see
having.
You. Good to see you. Well, thanks for watching Florida This Week. We're going to go out with one of those songs that Carl co-wrote with Warren Zevon. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and continue the conversation on Facebook. You can watch this and past shows online at wedu.org. Please join us again next Friday night at 8:30, Sunday afternoon at 12:30. From all of us here at WEDU, have a wonderful holiday season. Hyacin's Basket Case here on WMNF. That was the end of the interview with Carl Hyacin, the novelist. His latest book is called Squeeze Me, and it's a send-up of Palm Beach and everything related to Palm Beach, including presidents who lived there. So if you want to comment about the Carl Hyacin interview, you can email us or call us up, 813-239-9663. You can also send an email to dj@wmnf.org. David writes, it's great to hear one of my favorite role models, Carl Hyacin. I admire him for his dedication to journalism in an era where journalists don't get respect and are actually getting death threats for doing their dang job. Keep up the great work, writes David. And Matt in Hudson, I'm sure I'm not the only one who noticed the cover of yesterday's Bay Times clearly showing a construction worker flashing a white power hand signal. I did not see that, Matt. I didn't see that when I read my newspaper yesterday. I'll go back and check it out. Suzanne writes, absolutely love this show with Carl Hyacin. He's a great writer and environmentalist. I like when you have shows like that with one-on-one interviews and like the talks you did with Daniel Ruth on Midpoint, writes Suzanne. And then David writes, Carl is my favorite writer. I love the Skink character who's depicted as a former Florida governor. Skink is the antithesis of DeSantis. Yes, Skink is... Skink goes after developers big time in funny and dangerous ways. Dan writes this, thanks for interviewing Carl Hyacin. It's very refreshing to hear somebody speak about the overpopulation of Florida. Even NPR seems to shy away from that topic. Incidentally, I live in the Tampa Bay area. I grew up in Sarasota, and I cannot wait to retire and move to a less populated part of the state, writes Dan. Let's go to the phones. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Fred in St. Petersburg. Hey, Fred, you're on live. What would you like to say?
Happy New Year, Rob.
Happy New Year, Fred.
I love that interview with Carl Hyacin. That brings back so many memories. He's been all over the state, and I have too. I started out, as I probably told you before, in St. Pete in 1940. And I saw what was happening in Miami in the 60s, high rises on the beach. You couldn't even get to the beach hardly. And now it's happening in Pinellas County. Pinellas County's a perfect example of overgrowth. We're packed in here like sardines. I've seen the changes in the last, what, since 1940? How many years is that? I can't count it.
So that's 80 years old.
Yep, I'm 83. I was 3 years old when we moved down there.
So, Fred, you grew up in St. Pete, you said?
Yes, I did.
What was it like growing up in St. Pete? What neighborhood
going
did you grow up in?
Going to the beach in the 40s and early 50s was almost a full-day trip back in those days. And it wasn't, you know, high-speed cars and all, but the beaches weren't. We didn't have any high-rises, condo. When I was a teenager, we'd go out to the beach and light a bonfire until the police came and chased us away. But things have totally changed. And I lived in Vero, and evidently Carl's in Vero now. Yeah. And that used to be a quiet town. It's not going to stay quiet, although he mentioned they do have restrictions on the beach. On high rises, and I'm proud of them for that.
Fred, tell us about the water back then. Tell us, what was it like to go swimming in the Gulf of Mexico? What was your favorite beach back then when you grew up and were moving around the 40s, 50s, and 60s?
I was on St. Pete Beach, Treasure Island, Madeira, Indian Rocks, all those beaches. It's not the Gulf isn't so bad. It's as you've talked about many times, it's our rivers, streams, and springs. You know, throughout the state. They're the ones that are getting devastated by all this stuff. But anyway, I really appreciate your interview, Rob. It just brought back so many things talking with Carl. And I lived in Palm Beach County, worked there in the 60s. And that used to be, West Palm used to be a nice, quiet town. Those days are gone. Totally gone.
And Fred, when you see these giant, I mean, there used to be the mom and pop hotels on the beach, and there even many people had summer homes or cabins on the beach.
That's right.
A lot of those are being torn down.
Yeah, we stayed in, when there was a bunch of cabins, one property there in St. Pete Beach, Sunset Beach it's called, and we'd go there and spend a week, and I'd go out crabbing with my mother and aunt and catch blue crabs and all that. But, yeah, those days are gone, Rob. They're totally gone.
All right. Well, Fred, thanks a lot. Thanks for giving us that insight.
Well, thanks for your interview, Rob, and for all you do.
Thank you, Fred. It's good to hear from somebody who was born here and grew up here and has seen the changes and can tell us some of what it was like back then. Ron in West Tampa writes, thanks for the interview with the Florida treasurer, Carl Hyacin. His writing alone makes living in Florida worth the challenge. Met him several times. He is a cool guy and a fine Floridian, writes Ron in West Tampa. Well, if you want to comment about the interview, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. I'm going to suggest some other things that we could talk about. Here's an email. I can't really do this today, but Cindy in Palmetto says, I hope you could tell the story about death taxes that you mentioned at the end of last week. So, yeah, one of these days we'll talk about death taxes. Speaking of money, President Trump's decision to wait until late Sunday to sign a $900 billion coronavirus relief measure into law will likely cost millions of unemployed Americans a week of unemployment aid, given the bill's extension of benefits is still set to end in mid-March. Trump's signature, which paves the way for a $300 weekly boost to jobless benefits, came a day after two emergency unemployment programs lapsed, leaving around 14 million struggling Americans even more worried about their ability to cover rent and put food on the table. The president's official approval of the bill, after nearly a week of delay over last-minute demands, ensures that the emergency program will be extended, but the move does not change the March 14th end date of the extension. And because benefit weeks begin on Sundays in most states, Trump's belated signature will likely result in a week of lost assistance. So that's interesting. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. One of Saudi Arabia's most prominent women's rights activists has been sentenced to nearly 6 years in prison under a vaguely worded counterterrorism law. Lujain Al-Hatoul's case and her imprisonment have drawn international criticism. She was among a handful of Saudi women who openly called for the right to drive before it was granted and for the removal of guardianship laws that had restricted women's movement and make women's movement up to the men in their family. A state-linked Saudi news agency reported today that she was found guilty of charges including agitating for change, pursuing a foreign agenda, and using the internet to harm public order. I think that story is interesting because there are some people who think that Saudi Arabia is a good country and is moving toward more openness and equality and fairness. But yet this happens where somebody who is simply asking that women have the right to be free and move around and drive around freely gets a six-year jail sentence. 813-239-9663 is our phone number here at WMNF. And if you call in and want to comment about any of these stories, you may change the direction of the show by calling in right now. Officials have named 63-year-old Anthony Quinn Warner as the man behind the mysterious Nashville Christmas Day explosion. He was killed in that explosion, but the motive remains elusive. In just a few days, hundreds of tips and leads have been submitted, yet thus far, officials have not provided information on what possibly drove Warner to set off the explosion. The director of the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation told reporters yesterday that Warner had not been on their radar before Christmas. We're going to talk about Warner and that explosion in Nashville. That topic is going to come up in the next hour when they talk about the QAnon conspiracy theory that AT&T and its new cell phone system are evil. So that topic is going to come up in the next hour. So stick around and keep listening to WMNF. Well, I was talking with Carl Hyacin about mass shootings, and speaking of mass shootings, authorities say a U.S. Army Special Forces sergeant who's based in Florida has been charged in the deaths of three people and wounding three more in an apparently random shooting at a bowling alley in Illinois. In Rockford, Illinois, Winnebago County State Attorney Jay Hanley said that 37-year-old Duke Webb of Florida has been charged with three counts of murder and three counts of first-degree murder in the shooting at Don Carter Lanes in Rockford on Saturday evening. So, mass shootings continue. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And if you send in an email, please sign it. And if you keep it to two or three sentences, it's much easier to read on the air. So the address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's take another phone call. Let's go to, it says here, BJ in Tampa. BJ, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Great morning. This DJ smells so good.
Oh, it's DJ.
In.
Okay. What's up?
I just wanted to see, did you get my book?
I did get your book. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I did get your book. Thank you.
I just wanted to make sure you received it. How you like the cover?
I think the cover is very intriguing. So the book is all about spending time in jail.
It's a jailhouse deterrent. It's not about spending time in jail. It's not about bashing the Department of Corrections. This is a inmate's point of view, why not to go to jail. That's what it is. That's the whole premise of it. It's a jailhouse deterrent. And to be honest with you, I don't allow my friends to read the book, because I don't want people who've been previously incarcerated to sit and glorify things that's in the book, you know, that they might have similarly experienced. Not that type of book. If you read the back cover of it, that's the tell-all. You ain't even got to read the book, because you read the back, and the back should scare you enough. But if you really read it, and you can get through that first chapter, and you're still comfortable about reading that book, then I tell people, you already predispositioned to go to jail. You're going to jail. You know what I'm saying? Because this type of book and other books that are out there, I'm part of the scared straight era. You know what I'm saying? When you should take you to jail and take you to prison and let the prisoners and stuff yell at you. You know what I'm saying? So you won't come back and do those type of crimes. So this is my scared straight version in print.
So, DJ, do some people glorify going to jail? Do some people?
Yeah. I let some of my friends read it, and this is why I say I don't. It's a chapter in it where I just put out, you know, the exorbitant amounts of prices we got to pay for canteen and food like that. You know what I'm saying? So when they start looking at it, oh, yeah, look at the prices. See, that's glorification. You missing the whole point. You're completely missing my point. This is not for you to be like, yeah, this is something cool. This is should be like you even now reflecting and be like, wow, they was overcharged me all this type of money. And no, I don't need to be going back in there to be overcharged again. No, I don't want my niece, my nephew, my cousin. I don't want anybody to go in there and experience the type of experience that I went through.
All right, DJ, I've got it in my stack of books to read. Thank you.
That's real. Thank you, my brother. Happy holidays and happy new year.
Happy holidays, DJ. Thank you. 813-239-9663. Lou in Plant City says, thanks. You've proven again that journalism rocks and journalism has a sense of humor. Carl Hyacin only points out what makes Florida so very weird and wonderful, writes Lou, who's in Plant City. And then Kevin writes this. Longboat Key could have been a state park. Imagine that. Once upon a time, the Florida Springs were crystal clear. The beaches were uncrowded. There was less traffic, and life in general was a lot less stressful. We've come a long way, writes Kevin, kind of echoing what Carl Hyacin writes about in his books. So if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, Frank Knox is our phone producer today, and his friendly voice will answer when you call 813-239-9663. Well, a spokesperson for Governor Ron DeSantis has deactivated his Twitter account after the spokesperson posted a tweet that photos of each dead COVID-19 victim should be balanced with 99 photos of people who survived the disease. The tweet was captured in screenshots by a Miami Herald reporter and a reporter for WLRN Radio, the public radio station in Miami. In the post, the governor's spokesperson, Fred Piccolo, tweeted a response to a photo gallery of COVID-19 victims and healthcare workers. The tweet has since been deleted. In the past, Piccolo has questioned the effectiveness of face mask mandates and has said that COVID-19 is less deadly than the flu. I'm wondering what you're thinking about COVID-19 right now, and if you've had a brush with it. I was reading about Greg Norman, the golfer, who's, I think, 65 years old and in pretty good shape, just completed a tournament with his son a few days ago in Orlando. And he came down with it over the weekend, and he says it's like nothing he's ever experienced before. It knocked him down cold. He's a pretty strong and healthy 65-year-old, and because he's an athlete, you know, people might scoff at athlete and golf in the same term, and certainly President Trump hasn't demonstrated any athleticism when he plays golf because he rides a cart. But if you're a professional golfer and you're walking the 5 or 6 miles of a golf course, that does take a toll. And if you play several rounds a day walking, maybe practicing a little bit in the morning and walking around and then walking that 5 or 6 miles, it's not bad exercise. It's pretty good. Anyway, so Greg Norman, who owns a winery, says he can't even taste beer and wine anymore now that he's come down with COVID-19. That's terrible for those people who like beer and wine. That's especially shocking, isn't it? 813-239-9663. Tony sent in this email. Our Senator Marco Rubio just called Dr. Fauci a liar about masks in March when no one really knew about COVID. Is he speaking for us Floridians? Yeah, I'll have to pull up that story. I've been seeing just these texts come up on my phone that tell me about stories, and I've been seeing stories about Marco Rubio. Let me see if I can find a quality news story about what Rubio is saying about Dr. Fauci, and I'll try to read it on the air before the end of the program. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, thank you for calling. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Rob. First, shout out to DJ Smells So Good. Always good to hear his voice, and sounds like an interesting book he's put out. And also that program he mentioned, Scared Straight, which is something I think we should still have both in person and on TV. We used to watch that in the 70s. And if that didn't keep you from keeping your nose clean, then I don't know what would. But next month I turn 60, and I'm a Florida native. I can totally relate to Carl Hyacin. I'm from Key West originally. And when my family moved up to Brandon in 1967, my friends at Steppner Elementary School said, "Hey, where are you from?" I said, "Key West." And they looked at me and said, "Where's that?" So that just shows you how much this state has grown out of control. I-75 used to stop at Malfunction Junction. It didn't even come through Brandon. If we wanted to skip school and head down to Bradenton Beach, we had to jump on either Highway 41 or Highway 301 to head down that way, blaring our eight tracks and burning a big one down as we headed down to the beach. And although things have gotten crazy here in Florida, and I've threatened to leave this state, I'm also a big lover of small towns and back roads, and I've been down many of them. And I can always find a nice surprise in the interior of the state, away from everybody else and away from people who don't even know the interior exists, basically.
Yeah, there's beautiful towns in the interior. I think the challenge, too, for those of us that love Florida is how do we begin to make the rivers better, the springs better? How do we make sure that development doesn't destroy what we all love about Florida?
We got to turn the pressure up. People are just, like I said, when DeSantis first came in, he took a popular a subject like restoration of the Everglades and water quality issues, which was popular on both sides of the aisle. And as soon as people see something like that, they'll just back off and go, "Oh, well, he's doing good. We don't have to pay any attention anymore." And that's when everything goes downhill.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think the governor has taken very few steps. I think the real key is that Floridians passed a law that would take some of the money from dock stamps and use it to buy endangered land around the state. And now there's this effort to buy some endangered land here in the Bay Area, a couple tracts in Pinellas County. And local government can't come up with enough money readily to buy these endangered tracts. And I don't understand why that state money isn't available to buy some of this endangered land so we can preserve it and not eat up all of the natural areas that are around us.
Yeah, that's going on in Pinellas County right now. We're fighting with that Douglas tract issue in Dunedin right now. So, I don't know. Is Morgan and Morgan, are they big environmentalists? I mean, if you want something to jump on, then here we go.
Yeah. All right. Andy, thanks a lot. Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
I just read quickly two sentences from the story about Marco Rubio. I suspect it's going to become much bigger. Senator Marco Rubio aired his grievances on Sunday with the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci. The Florida Republican blasted the National Institutes of Health official, claiming in a tweet that Fauci lied about mask usage, has been distorting the need for getting vaccinated, and is part of a larger conspiracy of elites trying to deceive Americans. I think it's interesting that that Rubio also jumped in line to get a vaccine early, and now he's criticizing Fauci over vaccines. Let's go to Betsy in St. Petersburg. Hi, Betsy. You're on MNF. What's up?
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Just some comments as far as the COVID and our leadership, which you just covered with Marco Rubio and President DeSantis, I mean, Governor DeSantis with his hands-off approach of 100% open, and then Trump. I have four friends. I'm 59. I have four friends who have lost one parent to COVID. And just recently, my middle daughter came down with COVID. She lives in Colorado Springs, and her roommate's boyfriend flew in from California. He had some sniffles, thought it was the allergies, didn't bother to tell anybody that he wasn't feeling well, and they all got sick. And my daughter got the sickest, and she's 27 in very good shape. She's a nurse. She was down for 10 days with all the symptoms that they talk about of losing their, you know, your taste, smell, fever, cough, chills, diarrhea. 10 days she was sick, 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 and then she started to turn the corner and she said, "I am so weak." So I just, it's disturbing. Our leadership has failed us so miserably with this. And these next, month or two is going to be just continuing worse.
Yeah, it's going to get worse. So in regard to these politicians that are downplaying the virus and still comparing it to the flu, I wonder what your daughter would say.
Oh, it wiped her out. She was shocked. And then, of course, her roommate, who was boyfriend, who brought it, she only got a teeny tiny sniffles, and she wasn't going to go get tested, and then she was going to fly home for Christmas. And my daughter really pressured her and said, "You have to go get tested." She got tested, and she was positive. So she had hardly any symptoms, just like her boyfriend, and my daughter was down on her knees, and then another friend was kind of in between. So it's just, you know, I don't care if you're healthy and strong, because my daughter does 12-mile swims around the lighthouse down in Key West and was a triathlete. She's in great shape and has no underlining condition.
Yeah, you just can't tell how it's going to affect people. And the girlfriend apparently could have been a covert carrier of the disease to other people.
And one last thing, the boyfriend then called his parents who live in Indianapolis and said, "Look, all these people got sick. I think I had COVID." And his parents was like, "Oh, that's just a bunch of bunk. Fly home for Christmas."
That's terrible. Well, Betsy, right? I'm sorry I'm laughing, but that is awful. Betsy, thank you.
It is awful, I know.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the good information. And let's take one quick call from John in St. Pete. Hey, John, we just got 20 seconds. What would you like to say?
I just I've talked to you about this before. I had COVID. It was really, really bad. It's worse than the flu. Please wear your mask and get inoculated, because I'm going to take my shot as soon as I can.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Yeah, we'll probably do some more programs about it. It seems like some people are persisting and insisting that COVID is not so bad. Well, if you want to comment about today's program, call us up at 813. This is the comment line, 813-238-8001. And record your comment on extension 115. And I'll take those comments and play them on the air tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the start of the program when we come back here tomorrow. Stay tuned. Stick around because we've got a good program. Sean is away, but we still have a good program, including a look at the president's change of mind over signing the COVID relief bill. Thanks to Frank Knox, our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lurie. This is WMNF in Tampa. Thanks for listening, and here's the latest news.